All right, we're back again with Chris Chung. We're going to talk more rookie wide receivers. And before we get into that, Chris, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. This is a change of scenery for me. I'm back home in South Florida, so I am just taking this random break. So I'm good.
Nice, nice. And anyone who follows you on Twitter, and everyone should be following you at FFDynasty101, you were at the Canes spring game today.
I was. It was a lot of fun. This is my first spring game. I thought, you know, shoot, I got a free day, or I made myself a free day, and then just drove down 5 hours last night, come for the spring game, and head back up 5 hours again tomorrow.
Whoa, awesome. Jeez. A lot of travel going on. So certainly I appreciate, you know, coming in and hopping on the pod when you can.
Oh, absolutely. This is fun for me. It's energizing to me, so we're good.
Awesome. So we're going to launch again into Dynasty wide receivers, because, again, I think overwhelmingly that's the most kind of position-centric thought in Dynasty owners' minds is what wide receivers are out there, how deep can I go and get talent, and certainly anyone that's looking to see how deep you can go, I'd recommend checking out, I have it pinned on my Twitter page, so it's right up top, the Dynasty mock draft we ran. There's 12 of us in it, including me, Chris, and a bunch of other talented writers. There is talent to be had even deep in the draft, and we threw in a lot of comments with our picks, and it's just, some of these guys, you look around and you read other guys' comments and you think, like, wow, there actually are some guys you can get excited about in the fourth round.
I agree. This year, more than any other, I find myself looking at it and say, I like this guy, and he's going way later than I thought he would. There's just a little sort of player for everyone, I feel, in this draft, and it's certainly nothing to be down on. It's not necessarily deep, but it is a class where there is a lot of players that you can feel good about drafting late.
Yeah, I feel like just at the top of the draft, how there are guys that, you know, will really like Doxson or Coleman or Sterling Shepard. I feel like even at the back of the draft, you can go and find your guy there. And again, certainly I think it's worth checking out any Dynasty player, or honestly, even any NFL fan, to see just what some writers think about, you know, some of the prospects that are out there, you know, at the top and bottom of drafts. I feel like this will just be a great tool, and I know some guys want to write about it, and I'm going to have some guests next week from the mock to talk about that, among other things. So, I think that mock draft could be a great kind of resource for, you know, people who read us.
Absolutely. I think this is a great collection of people that you've corralled around, and to show us just how much fun this draft can be, and we're not even sure where these players are being drafted.
Yeah, I am the Nick Fury of fantasy football. I'm just gathering all the Avengers and putting them in mock drafts.
Oh man, I wonder which Avenger I am. I'll pick Ant-Man. I don't know.
There you go. Hey, that works. I dug that Ant-Man movie. Paul Rudd is awesome.
No, good. I still haven't seen it, but I'll pick that one.
Boom, next on the list. Okay, so kind of launching into the fantasy talk, because we eventually have to get to it, although I think we could just do a full hour on the Marvel Universe. I want to start off with Michael Thomas, and I feel like we have to clarify. We're talking right now about Ohio State Michael Thomas. We're talking about bad, with gigantic sarcastic air quotes, Michael Thomas. And I think it was earlier today, right? You tweeted out, if there's a bad Michael Thomas and a good Michael Thomas, why are we drafting the bad one ahead of the good one? So that echoes the sentiments of what I'm sure a lot of people who like his talent. Why are we calling him bad Michael Thomas?
Well, this tweet actually came into mind like midnight last night, and sure, now you can get inside of the process of my mind, how it works day and night, just thinking about football.
Constantly. That's why you're one of the best follows.
I don't know if it's an obsession, an addiction, or just a little bit of both. but in any case, this narrative of bad Michael Thomas pretty much started off at the combine when everyone saw him faceplant during the gauntlet and missing catches.
Mm-hmm.
And from there on, it just becomes such a huge narrative that this is Michael Thomas, he's not natural, he can't catch. The combine made a mistake of not taking the other Michael Thomas, who is flashy, athletic, does all those one-handed catches. In a sense, the narrative somehow became much more the perception rather than what the reality is of Michael Thomas. OSU Michael Thomas is a very good wide receiver in his own right. If you read some of the work by Matt Waldman or Kian Fahey, I know not a very popular guy at Twitter at times, but he broke down the OSU Michael Thomas, and it went well in shifting my perception, because I came into the season not truly liking the OSU Michael Thomas, partially because I'm not an OSU fan, but also he's not flashy in any sense. But the subtlety in his arsenal as a wide receiver will serve him very well as a NFL pro.
Right, and he is, he's one of these guys that he looks very pro ready. 6'3", 212, and he looks bigger on the field than 212. He doesn't look quite as lanky as some other guys. Now, the big thing for me is that he has a decent catch radius. He uses his hands to catch, so he does those kind of those little things that coaches won't have to teach him how to do. He catches away from his body, which for some wideouts, and we're going to talk about that a little later, hopefully with Fuller.
Mm-hmm.
When you're used to kind of going out and doing a little bit extra to get the catch, does that kind of go into evaluating him too? I feel like I really love those hands catchers. I'm always kind of a little, I don't know, afraid or down on guys that are just body catchers.
Oh, absolutely, and that makes sense, because ever since the start from my journey as trying to look at film, hand catching has always been phrased in a positive for a wide receiver. If you can catch away from your body, you are able to just, when you extend your hand, you are able to catch the ball away from the defender and giving them no chance to deflect the ball or intercept it. So a hands catching is a positive type of skill that you want. For Michael Thomas, you do see a lot of the body catching. And it's funny, because I had this brief conversation on Twitter with Matt Waldman talking about body catching, and he tells me not every single body catching is bad. And this is shown in the, if everyone follows the NFL, NFL Game Changer,
mm-hmm.
Michael Irvin teaches some of that, how to trap the ball properly. It's between the shoulder area, and I don't know how to illustrate it, but this is what you see in the OSU Michael Thomas, is that he varies his catching. He extends it, he can trap it well. He doesn't let the ball sort of hit the breadbasket. That is the bad body catching that you don't want, where mm-hmm. the ball can hit your chest or hit your breadbasket and just pops off.
Right, no rebounding.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at scouting reports for OSU Michael Thomas, you see a lot of things that he's got to work on, like a lot of fundamentals. He's got to get his route running a little crisper, not necessarily the route tree, which is, I think, sometimes a thing that people can confuse. Route running and a route tree, when talking about prospects, kind of differs. So he needs to polish his route running, his actual footwork. He needs to kind of adjust what he does before the catch. He has so many things to work on as a wide receiver before he has the ball in his hands, which is what they spend a lot of time doing. So when a guy has so many fundamentals that they have to work on like this, that they're a little bit of a project, where in a dynasty draft do you want to draft him? Because I know in our, you know, our rookie mock, which I have aptly named the Rookie Mocktacular, because I love bad names. I think of these names, and I sit on them for so long, and Rookie Mocktacular just came to me. So, Rookie Mocktacular, he went 111. So, is that kind of where you want to get him, or were you hoping he would fall a little later?
That's a very good question. In a lot of drafts, kind of look for a little context. In a sense, when you're drafting early, you are always looking for the prospect with the least amount of questions. And as you go down, you have to kind of gauge the risk. Is this an acceptable level of development that this prospect need to work on, and then make your choice there. For Michael Thomas, his fundamentals may not be as close to what you would want at this time. So for this draft class, I think it's perfectly fine where you want to draft him. He's going a little later compared to early on in the offseason where he went as early as 104, 105. But now he's dropping more towards the end of the first, which is, I think, quite appropriate for him because of this draft class specifically.
Yeah, and I think this is what we fall into, where guys have, where you can kind of pick your prospect and go with him. That I think dynasty drafts this year, rookie drafts this year, are going to be much more fun than they were in the past, because it's about picking your guy. So, you know, we were talking about this with the first batch of wide receivers. Sterling Shepard can go at the 103, or he can go, you know, at the 1-8. And I think it gets to be the same for every kind of crop of receivers here. That, you know, Michael Thomas, I did a mock about a month ago, and I think I took him with the 105 or the 106. So these are going to be fun, because you're going to get to kind of adjust your game plan on the fly. These are going to feel like those kind of old school, like the redraft drafts, where you can get together and you really got to have a plan and a lot of contingency plans.
Oh, absolutely. I think this year's class, like you mentioned, there's just about any player for anyone, and becomes a real personal preference. You'll find very little consensus if you ask just even our own people in our mock. If you ask them for their personal rankings, peek inside their cheat sheet, you'll find a wide variation between who's ranked where.
Absolutely, absolutely. So moving on, the next wide receiver I want to talk about is someone who I guess he's kind of slipping. Tyler Boyd. Now, he's one of these guys that I feel has kind of similar things to Michael Thomas, that he is someone we were kind of looking at a little higher early on in the process. Now that we've been able to dig through his film, people are finding some things they don't like. Because you had drafted him, so this is great that I get to chat about this guy with you. You drafted him, you commented, unspectacular, but his fall is great. I think that should be about the right spot to grab him. He's a medium floor, low ceiling guy. So, which I think is a fair assessment, and definitely getting him at 202 is certainly great. Why has he fallen so fast?
I think a lot of the things that going through it with Tyler Boyd, definitely it's been a roller coaster with him. He was living off reputation for the longest time. Mm-hmm. If you watch his freshman tape, he broke Larry Fitzgerald's record. And then moving on, you see him taking a step forward in his second year. But in his third year, there was a lot of changes. You can listen to a variety of podcasts or writings out there, and they can tell you what exactly those changes are. I'll save you the time there, but those changes really affected his production this year. So, and then people start looking at his combine numbers, and finally matching that with his film, and found themselves looking at a guy that does not have a high ceiling, which once you lose that perception of a high ceiling, your fall is going to be dramatic, because mm-hmm. people are rather look for higher boom bust kind of guys rather than someone with a low ceiling, medium floor.
Right. And I think I certainly understand that thinking as someone you always want to kind of grab someone who could turn into a potential star in the league. And that's why we see some of the guys we're going to talk about on the next episode, and certainly someone who's coming up right after this, that you want to find these guys who can be, you know, real game breakers. And I guess people just don't see that with Boyd, which isn't to say that I do, but you know, he's a guy who could end up being a wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3 consistently for a lot of his career. I know for dynasty owners that's not huge, but I think in the redraft community that's going to be pretty big. I think in a year or two, you know, Tyler Boyd is someone who's going to end up on a lot of sleeper lists, because and which isn't to say that I think he's going to necessarily meet that huge potential that, you know, when you draft a sleeper you think, oh, this is someone who could be a wide receiver 1 if everything goes right. I think he's constantly going to be a great flex play in his career, but I just don't know. I understand why dynasty owners are so down on him, and I guess I feel like his value to people isn't going to really hit what it realistically is for another year or two. But certainly, decent body type, 6'1", 197. He's another guy, he will get it into his hands and just kind of have the ball. I get that he won't get the yards after the catch, but not every wide receiver works like that either. You know, we can see things like Keenan Allen. He's a wide receiver 1 who has not the best breakaway speed, and certainly I'm not comparing them, but again, these things are all kind of to show people that you don't need to be this one type of receiver to be the top receiver for your team or for a fantasy squad for that matter.
Absolutely. I think you made a very good point in bringing up Keenan Allen. He's largely known as a technician rather than an athlete, and which fits kind of the same, just based off numbers, kind of fits how you would categorize Tyler Boyd. And definitely he'll need a very creative offensive coordinator who can put him in spots to give that role, have that role, and have that immediate contribution to a team because of his versatile skill set. And by and large, if he is producing in year 1, people may look at their rookies and get a little restless or impatient that their rookies aren't on the field yet, and this can make a Tyler Boyd a great piece to trade up for.
Right, right. And it's one of those things, I don't think you need the deep speed when, if it's not part of your game, you know, it's, he didn't always run, you know, go routes. So, you know, just when it's not what you're asked to do, you don't have to refine that skill set. And I think, you know, obviously NFL coaches and personnel men and scouts know what they're doing. They know that, all right, fine, he doesn't have that deep speed, but it's also not his game. He's not outrunning less talented quarterbacks, cornerbacks down the sideline. He's going in and he's working the slants and he's working a little shake route. So I think we're a little down on Boyd in the dynasty community sense, but I think he's going to end up being a fine pro, and maybe not the greatest wide receiver out of this draft class, but definitely someone that will make top 5 lists maybe when this is all done.
Well, hopefully. I mean, maybe that's probably his best case scenario, but in a sense, I think what you're saying is true, is that just have a good sense of feel for what he is and what he's not, and you'll probably won't be disappointed in taking the lead.
Right. So, how many years is Tyler Boyd, let's say you end up drafting him like you did in the mock, how many years is he rostered without the type of production you're expecting before he's cut?
I will definitely say if he doesn't give me the conservative projection I have it with him, his leash is probably going to be much shorter than most rookies that I usually take. Maybe 2 years. 2 years. I'll put it at 2 years, and then that's a hard evaluation after that.
2 years. Okay. And just throwing this out as a bonus, let's say there's enough progression. Like, let's say maybe for some reason, let's say he ends up on like a deep, squad when he's drafted, a deep NFL squad. Say he grabs 400 yards as a rookie, or maybe, 390, something like that, and he gets maybe 650 the next year. Are you keeping him into year three?
By then, I'm probably looking to see if I can trade him, package him up, just because I know that's close. He's already close to a ceiling now, so that is probably the ceiling that I see. So if there's nothing more that I can expect him to grow into, he's a very good trade piece. And that's not to say that you're trading him away because you're expecting him to just crash and burn, but
certainly if you think, yeah, if you draft, so let's say you get Boyd at the 202, if in another year or two you can go back and get, the 112, something like that, if you can kind of bump up a little, I get that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be the type of trade that I'm looking to make, yeah.
Got it. All right, so now we're going to go from a wide receiver who doesn't have that deep speed to the wide receiver that has all the deep speed in the world, Will Fuller, coming out of Notre Dame. So, I mean, first I want to look at, his body measurables. 6 foot, 186, so he's not terribly tall. He's not terribly big. He doesn't get these kind of routes over the middle of the field. He's just a little too small for that, especially at the NFL level. What do we do when you have a guy who plays on the outside, and he's certainly not as tough? I know we talked about this last episode with, oh man, I forget who it was that we brought out the Steve Smith comp to see if
that wasn't Sterling. It was,
I want to say it was, oh no, I'm forgetting his name right now because I don't look at him. Coleman, right?
I think it's Coleman, yeah.
Yeah, I think we were talking about Coleman with it. We didn't even do that episode too long ago, and it's out of my head. I listened to it not that long ago to make sure everything sounded good, and I can't remember his name. But yeah, I'm almost certain it was Coleman. So again, we can't even bring that up with Fuller as to whether or not he's Steve Smith. He doesn't have that on-the-field toughness. He doesn't have that kind of beefy build to him that he can take all these hits. So he's an outside guy. He can't run any, not can't run any, but you don't want him consistently running inside routes. He's really just a deep threat, although he does it well, and we'll certainly talk about that coming up here. But does his lack of a conventional role for like an NFL offense, does that hurt his chances on your dynasty squad?
Absolutely, it does. Fuller, there's too many questions about his overall game that his speed alone won't save him necessarily. I've seen him getting out physical by college corners, and we're not even talking about NFL corners who may just as well just push him and he falls flat on the floor. But Will Fuller needs to be used in a very nuanced way, and that means he'll be on a field on a very limited playbook, or the play calling will feature him very
kind of sparingly.
Plays.
Yeah, I get that. I will say, as far as a vertical threat goes, he does it very well. He knows when to take his foot off the gas almost to kind of lull his cornerbacks into thinking that his route is finishing, and he will blow right by them. So certainly to just call him a vertical threat, I feel, is kind of dismissing his skill set. He is a talented vertical threat, and he's good at tracking the ball. He's not the greatest high pointer, but he's able to track the ball in the air and adjust to that, which is a skill set, you know, in the NFL. We saw that from, you know, Devin Smith coming out of Ohio State. Just these little things that you kind of overlook, like, you know, ball tracking in the air is not something that you talk about a lot for a wide receiver. It's something more when you talk, you know, about safeties. Safeties can track the ball really well, but for wide receivers, it is equally important. So I feel like the chances of him ending up on my dynasty team are greatly affected by what NFL team actually drafts him. Like, I want to say if the Saints grab him, and certainly this is with me assuming he'll have Sean Payton for, you know, a few years. If the Saints draft him, I'm fine, because they can do that, and people are still out there, myself included, drafting Kenny Stills, because we love what we saw when he was with the Saints. So I feel like Will Fuller could do something like that.
That is a very interesting thing. So you're beginning to see that that's the kind of mindset that a lot of fantasy owners will have, that Fuller needs to be paired with an OC that really knows how to use him well, use him creatively, and put him in places where he wins.
Yeah, and certainly that's harder when you don't have as big of a skill set as Fuller does. He is a big body catcher, which is interesting considering he is a vertical threat. You often think of those guys with their hands outstretched reaching for the ball, and Fuller just doesn't have to do that because he's fast enough to catch up to it. But I'll say that if he works kind of less to be a body catcher, and maybe he develops a few more, you know, routes in his tree, if he's able to do just a little bit more, I think with where he's going in drafts, he can certainly be, a real dynasty asset for someone who's at the back end of a first round.
Oh, no doubt. I think the body catching seems very, very reminiscent of me of Ted Ginn Jr., who's also a body catcher with deep speed.
Yes.
So we have that. We have someone who did succeed, but it took him, 5 years, 6 years to get there?
Right.
So it's not impossible.
Right. The adjustment is big at the next level, but certainly you're right. He went 112 in our mock. So how high would too high be? I feel like 112 is kind of perfect for him. Where is the highest you would draft Fuller?
Depends on who's on the board. With the just gauging from our mock, I see a couple of running backs. I'll probably take Fuller over some of them, like Procise for sure, that I'll take Fuller over. So maybe 110, 111 is the highest I see myself taking Fuller. How about for you?
10-11 is his ADP, and I you are absolutely right that it totally depends who's on the board. And I did take Procise over Fuller. I had the 108. I would do that again, only because, again, this is the draft where you have to fall in love with your guy, and CJ Procise, outside of the top, outside of 105, 106, CJ Procise is my guy. So I really wanted to stick with that, but seeing Fuller there, not that I was shocked, but certainly you hear these things that he could be the first wide receiver drafted, and certainly every report you hear now that comes from an unnamed source or even a named one is, we are in the height of smokescreen season for the NFL draft and for dynasty owners as well. But I would say 112 is kind of perfect for me. Certainly there are guys, and we'll talk about some of them on the next episode, like Malcolm Mitchell and Southern Miss Michael Thomas, Tashae Sharp. There are guys that I love that I absolutely would take Fuller over. because I know that if things work out for him, he's going to be one of the best receivers out of this class, and he needs a lot to work out for him. But that's one. This is one of those things where you say, well, he could turn into like a really dangerous player. He could be, you know, Mike Wallace in those few years for the Steelers.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is where the fun can begin. You can either let someone else take him and know that he might be dropped if people get impatient, or you take him and knowing well that you're going to be spend that roster spot for a few years. With the hope, with that thought of they'll grow into a usable player.
Right. I think that is huge and super crucial that if someone else doesn't draft him, you can always keep an eye on him, because you know that if the returns aren't, you know, quick, that he might be, you know, someone that's cut just out of frustration, especially if you spend a first rounder on him. Because there are always some guys that are going to pop in the second, and when you spend one of those late first-round picks on a guy and you see someone who went two picks later wildly outperform him for even just 1 year, that frustration builds up really quick. So that is definitely, I think, something a lot of people should be doing with Fuller. If you like him and you're just not going to draft him, keep an eye on him because he could potentially be out there.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, so we're going now. We started with a wide receiver who didn't have great deep speed. We went to Fuller, who, you know, has the deep speed of three wide receivers. Now I want to go to Pharaoh Cooper, who is an interesting prospect for me. He's someone I am not wild about, but I can understand where owners really want him. He's a guy who has real great straight line speed, and he's not someone I guess you would want running out of the slot too much on those little kind of shake routes, because that's not his game. But he's 5'11 203, so he's built closer to a slot receiver, and he runs like an outside receiver. And while his straight line speed on the field is good, he ran a 4.6 at his pro day. Didn't run a 40 at the combine. What do you, when you're looking at wide receiver prospects, do you prefer guys who have that straight line speed, or are you looking for the more agile, shifty guys?
For a wide receiver of Pharaoh Cooper's caliber, the straight line speed doesn't really factor in too much for me, because you're not expecting guys like him to run nine routes consistently or trying to break open using speed to win. Of course, that means that he has to be very good out in everything else, such as agility, change of speed, change of pace, using techniques well, which what do you think about that as far as Cooper? Because I don't see him having a lot of skills at this point in his
development. Yeah, I just don't see that shake on film, and part of that is his build. 203, he looks big on the field. He looked big in the combine, and he didn't do too many drills at the combine. He just benched, did his vertical and his broad jump, so there were no speed or agility drills there. But he looks big on the field, and you strap the pads on him and he looks even bigger. So this is just one of those things for me that I can't figure out what to do with him. I feel like I'm not going to be drafting him because my head is everywhere on this. I think he could become a great player, and he's certainly a talented football player. He's great on the field, but I just don't know what I'd be expecting from him at the next level.
I think we're in the same boats. I have a hard time knowing where Pharaoh Cooper should be taken. There's a lot of variety of opinions about him. It feels a little bit similar to Tyler Boyd, but more so as a mid-tier prospect. Mm-hmm. So for me, a player of that type of questions that I have about him, or things that I don't see or wanting to see if he can develop, those are more of my third round kind of prospects.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, definitely, which is great. And I want to look up where he went in our mock, because I know it wasn't third round. I think he was part of that wide receiver run in the second. Yeah, he went 206.
Yes.
So for me, that's just a little... Oh, this is such a crazy one to evaluate, because I love Pharoh Cooper, the football player, and I just don't know how his game is going to translate.
And maybe that's what the thought would be, that maybe he's a better football player than he would be a fantasy producer.
Right. Yeah, one of those guys that you see the articles come out in week 8 that say he's more valuable to his NFL team than he is to your fantasy team.
Right.
Right. Definitely, you know, kind of one of these guys that is hard like this. When you, you know, sometimes you have to start, you know, straight from nothing. For me, that's, you know, height and weight. What does that do, you know, for you when you're looking at wide receiver prospects? How much does that kind of weigh into what you're doing?
Again, this perception kind of shifts reality thing really is what how I kind of view these height weight thing. If they can use their height well, or they have no problem holding down their weight, using their weight to either help them in their whatever they do, whether it's a running back or a wide receiver, using their weight well, then I really am just okay seeing the function of it. If there's the functional height and weight that's being used correctly on the field, I don't have any issues about it. But when I see them getting pushed around, or that they don't use their height in a correct manner and see a big mismatch, I'm not going to jump on board and say, oh, he has potential to use it well, because he already developed such a bad habit of not using those to his advantage. Why would I expect him to kind of learn how to do that in a more difficult setting?
Right. I absolutely agree. I think, you know, when you see someone like Calvin Johnson on the field, he knew how to use his height. He knew how to use his size. He did all the body positioning things. He did all the things that took advantage of everything he had. I think Calvin Johnson was obviously a gifted receiver at his current height. I think he would have been a gifted receiver if he was 5'10". He would have just learned to use his size differently. And you're absolutely right that it's only important when it is something that they're using for their own benefit. And that is something I can kind of use to argue for Pharoh Cooper. 5'11", but he's not, you know, running out there, you know, in college and high pointing the ball. He's not trying to go out there and be something he's not. He does have to develop a little more shake at the next level, kind of just a little move. But I will say the football player and the mental part of that of what he does on the field is great. That he knows what to take advantage of on the field. If he sees a cornerback slowing down, he will blow past him. He doesn't have, when you think about it, that second gear, but he has the mindset to notice when someone is slowing up and he can push enough to get past them. He knows when to kind of cut his routes off, you know, when there's not coverage underneath or if there's a small kind of pocket on the field. So Pharoh Cooper does so many of the mental things well. That I think he could turn into someone eventually who's, you know, a flex option, a wide receiver 3 for a fantasy team.
Huh. Those are some interesting points that you brought up that I haven't seen, but perhaps you were able to see his decision-making, and that's what we usually term it, decision-making for players. And perhaps Pharoh Cooper does have a high FBI that will make him a better football player than a fantasy football player, maybe.
Yeah, and he's one of those things. I'm trying to get as many views on Pharoh Cooper as possible because, no one can see this now, but I've just been rubbing my forehead this whole time because I'm so frustrated by this, because there's so much to like, And I feel like I just can't get over the hill on this. I can't be a full-blown Farrow Cooper fan. He would have to fall to me in the third round for me to draft him. He'd have to be there at, like, 304 for me
and
to draft him.
He may as well be. Like I said, depends on the league.
Right. All right, so moving along to a guy I can talk myself into, because this is great. Braxton Miller. Definitely one of the most fun guys to talk about, I feel like, when it comes to kind of looking at him for a dynasty team, which is what makes dynasty football so much fun now. This is the first year of me actually doing it. I've spent a lot of time thinking in a dynasty mindset and kind of trying to, you know, value players in a more dynasty mindset. So once I had about a year and a half of doing that and thinking that way, I was finally able to take the plunge and get into some leagues. So when we're looking at a guy like this, what's so fun for me is his lack of experience at his position that he's still really good at. So, you know, just not being a wide receiver for as long as you would like him to be, does that scare or encourage you?
It definitely puts a lot of intrigue in the prospect. Perhaps it's just selective memory, but I can't think of someone who made a conversion successfully and become a top end player of their position. And for Braxton Miller, the main worry that I have with him is his age. He is close to 24, I believe. He's 23.
I think so. Yeah, I think he's going to be 24 by the time the season starts.
Right. So he might be a very good athlete that is capable of making a shift, but at the same time, you're asking him to learn about the nuances, and he hasn't even shown that he has have the fundamentals down in the college game, and only 1 year to be able to play a wide receiver. So it does scare me more than it makes me intrigued about any potential that he may have.
Right. I feel like I don't want to say cautious, because there's potential for people to take that the wrong way, but I feel like you do have to kind of tread lightly with a guy like this, and it's certainly why I think his ADP is where it is. He's going around like the 15th overall pick typically in mock drafts, and I mean, I want to double check where he went on ours, because I know I believe he went a lot later than that.
Let me see.
Yeah, he went 305 in our mock. So certainly a lot further down than his typical ADP, which I'm finding off of DLF now.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I love where he went in our mock more than I like his ADP. What was it? I'm looking who grabbed him now in our mock. Joe Redman. Yeah. So, this was a phenomenal pick. I think Joe really worked this draft well. Especially his fourth round pick, which he farmed out, to me, because I got to make an extra pick and nothing's more fun than that. So I think he crushed it in the fourth. But I will say he took... I almost said Sterling Sharp in the first, which would be an awful dynasty pick. He took Sterling Shepard in the first, and then came back with Jonathan Williams out of Arkansas in the second. And he worked this like a real draft, because he said it's, you know, kind of the place that he can grab someone with Miller's uncertainty, with kind of what he has with Sterling Shepard, that he feels he has a very safe, you know, prospect that still has upside with Shepard, so he's totally fine taking the gamble on Miller. I can see Joe doing something like this in, you know, actual dynasty leagues, and certainly a lot of owners doing this similar things.
Well, absolutely. I think you're very correct in saying that he worked this draft really well. You don't want Braxton to be your second player maybe drafted, but as your third player, you have two rookies ahead of him, and with a Braxton Miller who may have that upside of being another second round talent, it really gives you a very good sense that you may have just bought yourself like a first round and then two second round talents.
Right. I think that's huge. Yeah, that's the perfect way to put it. That he's someone, if you can get him in the third, I think that's a home run, because you are getting what could end up being. I feel like if he would have spent an extra season at wide receiver, not necessarily an extra season in college football, but if he would have made the shift to wide receiver a season earlier, and of course he wouldn't, because, you know, Cardale Jones breaking out was a thing, so I don't even want to get into that. I'm not saying he should have made the switch earlier, but if he did, I think he'd be a little more of a polished product, and there's a chance we would have been talking about him either at the top of this episode or maybe at the back end of the first one, that, you know, an extra season could have led him, it could have led to him being one of the better prospects.
Oh, for sure. I mean, just this year, the things that he was able to do in games with, if you imagine just one off season of wide receiver practice, it's amazing that he can catch up to a lot of the wide receivers who've been playing in, Division I football for 3-4 years. So yeah, Braxton Miller is a very intriguing prospect with a interesting path to the NFL.
Yeah, certainly. And it's a, you know, as we look at what he does on the field, you know, he'll run either very short or very long routes. He's either kind of running across the middle of the field to snag the ball and get to the opposite sideline and turn up, or he's just running vertical routes and, you know, getting deeper than the deepest. So if he ends up being, because I don't know if you want to send him over the middle in the NFL, or, you know, he's not, again, he's not someone who looks big and stocky on the field. And when you bring into, you know, comparing him to what NFL linebackers and people who would be hitting him over the middle of the field look like, I certainly don't want him doing that too often in a game. So if he ends up being just kind of a vertical weapon, if I could tell you in, you know, 2 years that Braxton Miller is basically just a vertical weapon, where would you be taking him? In dynasty leagues, I should say.
Yeah, just a vertical, and he does it well.
Yeah, so let's, yeah, I feel like
I probably would have taken him instead of my guy that I took at 302. So maybe a little earlier.
Maybe, yeah, and 302 is Rashad Higgins.
Rashad Higgins, yes.
Probably. Yeah, I can get with that. I think a lot of this, again, because the phrasing of this question, and I phrased it, so this is really me taking a dig at myself. The phrasing on this is so kind of ambiguous that I guess I should qualify. Like, let's say he's maybe a step under what everyone thought Mike Wallace would be. So let's say he is what Dolphins fans would have been happy with when Mike Wallace came to the team. So, hey, I get to take a little dig at your team while I fix my question. This is great. This is the best podcast ever. Which is, I'm really coming from an awkward point, because, you know, being a Jets fan prior to this season, I hadn't seen a passing game in my lifetime.
You can pick on the Dolphins right off the bat. Yeah. No problem.
Yeah, I wait till the end of the episode. That's how I do it. Because if I made fun of them right at the top, that'd be awful. I wouldn't be able to get you back.
It's not that bad. Okay. If Braxton Miller was just a little below Wallace, that was your question, right?
Yeah. So if he ends up being a useful vertical weapon.
Again, this probably, and I'm not very a big fan of saying, like, oh, I'm going to wait until I find out where their landing spot is, who their quarterback or who their situation is. But for Braxton Miller, if that is the case, I do want someone who can throw deep accurately, so that leaves out Tannehill for sure.
All right.
And gives you very few options left, to be honest. It gives you Rodgers, maybe Brady, Breeze, definitely, Russell.
Yeah, Russell maybe, because I guess you have Tyler Lockett run more kind of shake routes. Definitely someone like Flacco or Kaepernick.
Yeah, it definitely would elevate his stock and elevate his the what how I view him, and maybe it'll crack that second round. I'm telling you, if he can hit all those points that you just mentioned.
Yeah, I still feel like, you know, 15th overall, which is the 203. I still wouldn't do that, even if I could. Even if I could be, you know, if I had the crystal ball to look at it and be certain, I still don't think I'd be, end of the back end of the second round would still be like where I take him. Mm. And I just can't see myself going any further. And to kind of, to add another facet to these insane questions, this was a fun one because I thought of it and I smiled and then I realized I didn't have an answer either. But so let's say he, you know, everything happened that happened this season. He played wide receiver. He did pretty well. Let's say he wanted to enter the draft as a quarterback. Where would you have him in this crop?
Man, I wasn't the biggest Braxton fan. Again, my perception might be painted because of the uniform that he was wearing. He's not bad in any facets. I mean, as far as a quarterback goes, he's more, if he actually enters as a quarterback, he might have a career as a backup quarterback with those athleticism, with those legs too. He's not a run first type of quarterback by any means. He's very capable of just playing from the pocket, better than Taj Boyd, that's his name? Taj Boyd?
Yeah, Taj Boyd.
He was a Jets guy, right?
Yes. Taj
Boyd. we have to remember, Braxton Miller had a near undefeated season when he played the first year with Urban Meyer, and that is quite the feat.
Yeah, absolutely. He adjusted to a new system. It was great.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's a decent quarterback. I think he can make it as a injury backup kind of quarterback.
You're right. I feel like he would kind of be Seneca Wallace with less running around.
That's a good one.
Because I feel like Wallace does a lot of movement out of the pocket, and he's just way more comfortable throwing on the run. Miller was a pretty decent quarterback that only ran when he had to, and he was pretty explosive when he ran. It was not quite like the Mike Vick experience, but it was like watching Mike Vick light.
Okay, I can give it that. Definitely give it.
So I think it would be interesting. I think whatever team grabs him in the draft, they're certainly going to explore adding those 2 to 3 like little plays, like Antoine Randall style.
Oh, yes.
Just, so I can see something like that happening. I think Miller's going to be a fun pro to watch, and he's one of those guys that if he's on the back end of your dynasty team, I don't know that you'll ever be starting him as a wide receiver if he doesn't, if he becomes this type of gadget player. I don't know if he'll be startable in fantasy leagues, but he'll be someone that kind of carries a little bit of value. I think if you have him, he's kind of fun to have on your team, because every now and then, if you just know you're crazy overmatched in a week, you throw him out there and hope maybe he throws a touchdown and catches some sort of 80-yard pass and maybe has a punt return touchdown. Maybe he, kind of learns to be a special teams guy.
As you described that, I kind of think that fits exactly what I want if I'm playing on MFL 10, so... If you're playing in MFL 10, go grab them.
Right, absolutely. And I'm sure, I don't know offhand, and I haven't even done one yet. I'm probably, when they come back, from maintenance on Monday.
Oh, gosh, I would just...
I know, that's going to be awful. But when they come back from that, I'm probably going to try and hop in my first for the year. And hearing that, you're absolutely right. He's definitely someone I'm going to be looking at. It's all right, we made it through another 5, and... We held this pretty quick. I mean, we're almost hitting an hour, but still, I think there were a lot of fun things here.
Oh, definitely. This year of wide receiver really makes you do your own homework to kind of figure out who you want. So.
Right. Absolutely. So, I'm gonna get you back on. We gotta go even deeper into the wide receivers, and I'm really looking forward to that next episode. A lot of fun names there. I'm gonna get to talk about Tajay Sharpe and why that UMass offense is so weird. So that's fun for me. But yeah, these are great, and I think these are a huge kind of way to just have that extended talk about what do you like about a guy, why is he the wide receiver you like, and certainly in a draft class where everyone has a guy they like, I think it helps to hear people go a little more in depth as to why they like some of these guys.
Absolutely. This is going to be a fun, even more fun as we delve deeper into the other wide receivers.
Well, all right, man. You're coming back. We're doing it all over again with five more. So, awesome. You know, everybody should look forward to any episode that I have with Chris.
Yeah. It's just listen to the Fantasy Force, man. Good guests coming up. Lots of good content.
Next week. Coming up next week. This is going to be a busy week. This is going to be a lot of shows with a lot of talented people. So, you know, everybody make sure you're subscribed on iTunes to the Fantasy Force podcast. You can check out my writing, which is a little more sporadic now in the off season, but that's going to get dialing up pretty soon as well, right on thefantasyforce.com. Make sure you're following Chris on Twitter at FFDynasty101. You can get at me at @the_ATJ. Until next time, peace.
Peace.